Okay, here we go. Stand by.
3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
This month, everybody's talking about the Supreme Court, right? The highest bench and benchmark for American law and justice. Or is it? Is it instead a bunch of ideological activists who are abusing the bench to sort of impose themselves and their own ideas on the rest of us? Well, I decided I needed a primer on the United States Supreme Court, where it came from, what it's been doing over the past several hundred years. And of course, my friends at Wondrium had a series called History of the Supreme Court. It's part of the Great Courses Plus. It's taught by Dr. Peter Irons, and he was revealing something that I found interesting, that divisions and conflict, the sort of internal squabbling at the Supreme Court, has always been there. From laws on flag burning and free speech to the rulings on presidential elections, there's always been this clash of opinions and values inside the court in the United States that is anything but united. I found this hugely interesting history, and you can watch History of the Supreme Court and thousands of other wonderful Wondrium offerings taught by the best in their fields. Video and or audio, you can watch on your screen or listen via the app. It's totally ad-free, and it's always compelling. And I want you to sign up for Wondrium today, a great supporter of this broadcast. And Wondrium is offering my listeners a free trial plus 20% off the annual plan. Now, to get this offer, you have to use my special URL, Wondrium.com/Seth. Again, that's Wondrium.com/Seth. Sign up today. If you've been freeze-dried for the past several weeks, actually the past several years, there's been this fear that an increasingly evangelical Supreme Court, right? We've got 5 Supreme Court justices, conservative evangelicals, appointed to the court by 2 presidents who lost the popular vote, okay? The first George Bush and Donald Trump. I find that very interesting. So these evangelicals then comprise the court majority. And it is leaked that the court is preparing to dismantle Roe v. Wade. And the whole country splits. Of course, Roe versus Wade was the 1973 landmark decision by the Supreme Court, which ruled that the Constitution protects a woman's liberty to choose to have an abortion without excessive government restriction. This was a history-making ruling, and it happened about 50 years ago. Now, here's another interesting wrinkle in an already complicated story. So this leak comes out, this leaked majority opinion by Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito, who is, by the way, a devout Catholic, and we all know how reliable the Catholic Church has been when it comes to bodily autonomy, reproductive rights, and, you know, women in general. Well, within this draft opinion that was leaked, Samuel Alito references a guy named Sir Matthew Hale. He was an English jurist in the 17th century, and he was pretty much an awful person. Now, remember, Justice Alito is leaning into this guy, the words and works and attitudes of Sir Matthew Hale, to try to justify the dismantling of Roe v. Wade. Sir Matthew Hale declared that a woman cannot be raped by her husband. Hale is on record as having written these words: "The husband cannot be guilty of a rape committed by himself upon his lawful wife, for by their mutual matrimonial consent and contract, the wife hath given up herself in this kind unto her husband, which she cannot retract. So according to Sir Matthew Hale, marriage for a woman amounts to contractual forfeit. She loses legal protection or recourse if she is sexually assaulted by her husband because she's already his wife and cannot legally be raped. In the courts of law, Hale believed it was just too easy for a woman to accuse a man of rape, so he helped to establish this long list of factors for jurors to weigh. He said, is the woman who claimed rape of good fame or evil fame? Did she cry out? By the way, that sounds very Old Testament, right? A rape victim who doesn't cry out is also guilty of the rape kind of thing. Did she try to flee? Did she complain immediately afterward? Is she supported by other people? He stacked the deck essentially in favor of men because, you know, women are weak and need to shut up and submit. In 1666, Hale presided at the trial of two women at Bury St. Edmunds, and these women were accused of witchcraft. Well, Matthew Hale told the jury that witches are real. The reason he knew this is because it said so in the scriptures. And that jury convicted two women, Amy Denny and Rose Cullender, of witchcraft. And then Hale sentenced both women to death by hanging. And 30 years later, this particular handling of the quote-unquote witches by Sir Matthew Hale in that trial, preserved in written record, served as a model for the infamous Salem witch trials of Massachusetts in 1692. This guy is a freaking nightmare when it comes to women, and he is the one that Justice Samuel Alito refers to as a historical authority in this leaked draft opinion on Roe versus Wade. What century is this anyway? And what century would these evangelical conservative activists on the Supreme Court like us to be living in? I find this a salient question. Constitutional attorney Andrew Seidel has written a piece for Religion Dispatches that he's given me permission to read. Actually, I'm going to read just part of it here and link to it. It's titled The End of Roe and School Prayer. America is not ready to be a Christian nation. He said, conservative Supreme Court justices are rewriting our Constitution. The leaked draft of Justice Alito's majority opinion overturning Roe v. Wade radically alters American law and our understanding of constitutional rights. It isn't the first consequential reversal from this court, nor will it be the last, but Americans are unprepared to live under the regime being crafted by judicial fiat. We are not ready to live in a Christian nation. Alito's draft opinion will become a reality sometime in the next 2 months. Roe v. Wade and reproductive freedom as a constitutional right will be dead. In 13 states, abortion will be outlawed. As we've written here on Religion Dispatches, and as Alito's opinion makes pretty damn clear, the end of Roe is just the beginning. The Christian nationalist who put Trump into power and packed the high court won't be satisfied until abortion and contraception are outlawed across the United States. Alito's lip service in his draft opinion about returning these issues to the states and to the people is disingenuous. The court could have decided a case like this at virtually any time, but waited until after it had completely gutted the Voting Rights Act in Shelby County back in 2013 and Brnovich in 2020, and after it had upheld partisan gerrymandering in Rucho versus Common Cause 2019. Those decisions protect the power of the conservative white Christian who would otherwise be subsumed in a demographic tide that would keep them out of office for good. The measures empower the shrinking demographic that's raging against the dying of its privilege, that wants to resurrect long-dead bans on contraception and gay marriage, that wants to criminalize being gay. Alito's opinion reads like a hit list, with BIPOC, Black Indigenous People of Color, women, and LGBT people as the target. They will not stop until conservative white Christian men are a special privileged class and everyone else sits in the second class cars. In short, they want a Christian nation. And the article goes on. I'll link it in the description box in case you want to go read it. But Andrew Seidel references three church-state cases this term for the United States Supreme Court. How this court is posed to tax all of us to fund religion. He mentions the Kennedy versus Bremerton case. You've been watching that? This is about the football coach who was kneeling with all of his players at the 50-yard line at a public school for a post-game prayer circle. And then he said, well, this is a personal exercise. It's not a school exercise. Wait a minute. He's got the whole damn team out there. So that's in front of the court. Talks about the efforts to defeat evolution education and enforce Bible classes and put portraits of Jesus and in God we trust and have school-imposed prayer in our public school systems. He addresses the Florida Don't Say Gay bill, the flying of the Christian flag over Boston City Hall, this Christian crusade against a pluralistic democracy. His final paragraph says the separation of church and state is one bedrock that protects and enshrines equality in a way that too many of us do not understand, but which will be painfully obvious when it's gone. That separation is what ensures that we all have freedom without favor and equality without exception. That separation is America. And if the justices finally tear down the constitutional wall that ensures that separation, they'll be tearing down America and erecting on its ashes a Christian nation. Americans are not ready. Did you see that clip on the internet from Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene? Of course, this all has to come down to God versus Satan. I mean, what major political issue has not been weaponized by the evangelicals to be about good versus evil, God versus Satan, which is one of the reasons why Democrats like me have been called by people like Marjorie, you know, pedophiles and blood-drinking Satan worshipers, etc. Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene did this interview. She was talking to a Catholic activist. His name is Michael Voris. And this is on Twitter. You can see it. She said that Satan is whispering. Satan is whispering. Manipulating women into getting abortions that they will very soon regret. Here's the audio.
It's whispered softly and gently into your ears and into your soul. And he tells you it's okay. And he says it's just this one thing. You're just going to get it done, get it over with. And then he tells you a promise. He promises you all these dreams that you have in your heart. And that's how Satan sells a sin, and that's how he sells abortion. He tells a woman that all you have to do is you're just gonna go to this clinic, just gonna get it over with, you know. And then you're going to, that guy, he's gonna stay with you. That boyfriend or the guy, whoever he is, he's gonna marry you, sweep you off your feet.
Okay, so that clears it up. A woman realizes she is or may be pregnant, and there is a man. And Satan says that if she gets the abortion, then her man will accept her and marry her under the promise that things are going to be okay until her life completely disintegrates because she has surrendered to Satan. Marjorie Taylor Greene, that woman is as dull as a sack of wet mice. I mean, I just look at her, even among the anti-abortion activists out there, and there are a lot of them who are not unintelligent people. Marjorie Taylor, great. I mean, she's amazing. She's dumber than a box of hair. The woman forgot to pay her brain bill. You know what I'm saying? She is as bright as Alaska in December. If you travel to her top floor, the sign says, vacancy. Her warranty has expired, my friends. She is the inverted Einstein, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Elected by her district in Georgia to represent the state. This is terrifying. This is the same woman who said that Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, was part of the gazpacho police. Gazpacho police. She's the same woman who's the Jewish space lasers woman. That's right. Jewish bankers are flying lasers, satellites over California forest, and shooting a laser down to set them on fire so that these runaway wildfires will help us force through climate change legislation, therefore stripping Americans of their hashtag freedom. Anyway, this is not a show about Marjorie Taylor Greene, although that might be fun. This is a show about Roe v. Wade under the shadow of the Supreme Court. I want to talk to somebody who's on the front lines of this particular conversation. It is Rachel Lazar. She is president and CEO of Americans United, AU.org, also known as Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Rachel, I sort of ambushed you because I was doing this conversation in the heat of the moment, and you were kind enough to like take my phone call. So thank you.
It is my pleasure. There is nothing more important than talking about a life and death issue and taking a wrecking ball to what's core to our democracy. So I'm here for it, Seth. Let's talk about it.
You have a strong background as an activist when it comes to reproductive rights. You want to give everybody sort of your resume, for lack of a better way of saying it?
Yeah. So I started working on these issues really as a younger lawyer at the National Women's Law Center, where I really worked on the front lines of the abortion and birth control debate. And there I actually founded the Pharmacy Refusal Project that was stopping pharmacists from being able to refuse to fill women's birth control prescriptions. And after that, I spent some time at Third Way, which is a think tank that reaches centrists and brings them into the progressive fold. And there I did a really one of my favorite projects of my life. We actually called it Come Let Us Reason Together after Isaiah 1:18. And it was about bringing together progressives and white evangelical Christians on abortion, because that can be done. Actually, it was done. And what we brought them together on was the idea of reducing the need for abortion while protecting the right to have one. So there were plenty of evangelical Christians, white evangelical Christians, who were part of this movement that wanted to increase access to birth control, increase comprehensive and age-appropriate sex education, and increase support for pregnant women and new families so that we could reduce the need for abortion without having to take away the freedom of women to be able to access abortion. So I've spent a lot of time protecting the right to an abortion and finding shared values. And I have to say that makes me incredibly even more sad, questioning my own role that I've played, you know, as part of this movement, now that we're potentially seeing the right, you know, completely taken away for the time being.
I'm glad you mentioned sex ed, though. I mean, when I was in the church, you know, religious sex ed, at least when I was growing up, consisted of your body is shameful, cover it up, and especially girls, cross your legs. I mean, it was just pathetic, right? And certainly there were contraceptives for sexually mature people in their teens and early 20s was discouraged, you know, be fruitful and multiply, and all these types of things played into it. But, you know, one of the solutions to abortion, the abortion issue, is education. And I'm amazed at how many of these hardline evangelicals seem terrified of sex ed.
Well, I think that's true, that if a movement is truly dedicated to reducing abortions, since almost half of unplanned pregnancies result in abortion, let's stop the unplanned pregnancies from happening as much as we can. I mean, stuff is always going to happen, but let's try to reduce the unplanned pregnancies. And there's a very logical, there are logical ways to do that. Right. And so that's where I think a movement that is legitimately focused on reducing abortions and not trying to be punitive to women or control women would focus its energies more. And we should all be coming together around those things at a minimum.
I've admitted I must have been monumentally naive. In the past years, I was thinking, okay, they're going to come after Roe v. Wade, but it's going to be, you know, 4 or 5 years, right? 6, 7 years. I never thought it would be now. Did you feel that? Or are you smarter than me, Rachel?
Definitely not smarter than you. And I was definitely worried about it. But like you, I think when, you know, in one's lifetime, one hasn't witnessed something, it's just hard to believe. So it's like a punch to the gut, and it is a shock, even though, you know, every logical sign was there.
I know this is a subjective answer to perhaps a loaded question. How much of this is about people, in your opinion, people who genuinely believe it's a human life that they are trying to protect? And how much do you think is about control?
That's always a tough one to answer. I believe that at heart, it's about control. For sure. So at heart, I don't think it's a tough question. And I mean, controlling women. But I think that a lot of religions have integrated into their theology sort of a perspective that the rank and file are taught. And so I think that it makes it more complex than just being about control. It also becomes about, you know, being dutiful to one's faith and a certain narrow type of faith, right? Because they're are other faiths that are pro-abortion rights. But I think there's another point to be made about what's at the core of this, Seth. And I think it's best described in what happened with the Southern Baptist Convention when the Roe v. Wade decision first came down, which is that they celebrated the decision, right? And that was in the Baptist press. And I'm quoting now, actually, I pulled the article. They said that the Roe decision, quote, advanced the cause of religious liberty, human equality, and justice. In the Baptist press. And by the late 1970s, so that was in 1973, and by the late 1970s, we saw the Southern Baptists change their theology and their position as a religious denomination and oppose abortion rights. And there's been a lot of writing about why that happened. The predominant view is that the Southern Baptist Convention was really opposing desegregation. And really had more of a white supremacy agenda at heart. But that after this many years after Brown versus Board of Education, that wasn't something that they were able to be explicit about. And meanwhile, over there, Phyllis Schlafly and her Eagle Forum and her traditional family mantra was playing really well, like unexpectedly well in the public square. And so Southern Baptists actually decided to take on abortion very intentionally as something that played well, but really as a way to advance even more than just control over women, right? Which was an agenda that was about control in all of the traditional places for white people, for men, for Christians, et cetera. And that
this was back during Falwell, wasn't it? The moral majority rises up and we saw these wedge issues. I mean, for many people, especially among the evangelicals, right? Abortion becomes the only voting point that they need to hear. And they rush to the polls. They rush to the voting booth to support the quote unquote pro-life party.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think that some of what was at the heart of that movement was actually one that was fighting for white supremacy, but that could no longer get away with doing that outrightly. And so things like traditional family that played better in the public square started being the coalition rallying cry. But where, you know, control over women was but a piece of a larger agenda still that was about maintaining existing power structures, including white power.
I remember when I was a devout evangelical, we just loved the phrase traditional family values. Yeah. The traditional family must be protected. And looking back now, I'm like, so white, Protestant, hetero. I mean, that's what they consider to be the traditional family.
Exactly, which is really out of favor today. And not just out of favor, but not in sync with the reality of the many ways that families do look today.
So now you got a divided court, and which, I mean, we've always seen, and I mentioned this near the top of the show, we've seen the court squabbling. We've seen it squabble over, you know, a lot of human rights issues and issues related to law, free speech. I mentioned the burning of the flag, and it's helped to decide presidential elections. And it's not like the court has never been partisan. But now, I mean, it just seems like it's fractured, perhaps beyond repair. I mean, every time I see a dissent from Sotomayor, I just wonder what's going on in the back rooms. The court, the Supreme Court, has an identity crisis. Would you agree with that?
I would say that the Supreme Court is losing credibility, like bleeding its credibility in a very dangerous way for our democracy right now. I think its identity crisis is it going to be a political arm, or is it going to, in the balance of powers, be, you know, an independent judiciary? And I think that that's really at risk right now. We need the American people to feel confident in the Supreme Court's ability to play justices and not politicians advancing a certain agenda, conservative political agenda, and arguably a religious agenda, which is, of course, antithetical to the very foundation of the way the founders defined and put into law what our country is about.
Certainly, given the demographic shifts going on in the culture, this is not a representative court. I mean, I think everybody on the Supreme Court, don't they represent some flavor of Abrahamic faith? But we see, you know, a multicultural America. This court does not look like us.
It doesn't. It doesn't. And I, you know, do we really know, for example, and I'm not saying they are, but could there be an atheist on the court? Like, who knows? Because as you know better than most, and frankly, for me, it was sort of a learning curve. I mean, I'm Jewish, you know, but I come from the pretty progressive, I've come from Chicago in the city, and in Judaism too. I mean, it took me a while, and a lot of your listeners may laugh at this, but it took me a while to realize the challenges of being an atheist in America. It's ridiculous, you know, given the country's promise of religious freedom. We will never have true religious freedom without atheists being on completely equal moral and legal footing with everyone, you know, in this country. But so we don't even know who they are. But honestly, I think there's a place for representation for sure, and for making sure that, you know, we're seeing sort of representation bear out who we are as a people. But I also think that it shouldn't really matter. I mean, you know, on the court, we have Catholics who are imposing a narrow version of their religious viewpoint, right? Because we know rank and file Catholics aren't even with the Catholic bishops on abortion, on the law. And then we have other Catholics like Justice Sotomayor who are, you know, very protective of the separation of religion and government, right? So we've got both. So it really, like, at Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and please, everyone, we need your support at AU.org. We bring together religious and non-religious Americans to fight for the separation of church and state so that we can all believe and live as we choose.
I'm preparing a broadcast with Dale McGowan, and it's titled, Values Are More Important Than Beliefs. Like, my gripe isn't with somebody who has a specific personally held religious belief or not. It's the people who weaponize that to tell other people how to live their lives, you know. And I'm talking here, by the way, with Rachel Lazar, who's the president of Americans United. I know you're busy. Couple more minutes, real fast. I want to know, is Roe over? Like, is this a done deal? Is the Alito, you know, opinion and the leak and all the, I mean, are we screwed?
Well, for one, we know that it's not over yet. So this isn't a final opinion, and there's nothing binding about it. And justices can change their opinions until the opinion is out. So that's one thing. So keep your abortion appointments if you have them. That's important. But let's say that this opinion is the real deal, and this is what we get from the majority of the court. Then we could pass a protection. Actually, today the Senate is voting on the Women's Health Protection Act, which would be a way to create federal law and protection for everyone across the country of abortion rights. We could, in the absence of that, states can pass protections, and many are, but we know that some won't, right? And then there are more subversive ways of protecting a woman's right to choose. There are networks that are growing of women who are, and men, all people, who are giving money in order to protect people who may be sued and owe fees for providing abortions. There are underground options. There are medications today. I mean, I think, you know, fortunately, we are not in the era of coat hangers anymore, and that there are safe ways right now for women to be able to obtain abortions. And even if they have to do it in a more underground fashion. So it's not over, but I will tell you, for women who are poor, for disproportionately Black and Brown women in this country, there will not be an equal access to the freedoms that our country promises us.
I saw a meme on the internet, and it said, if men could get pregnant, and it showed a McDonald's, and the sign said McBortions. I mean, it would be that easy, right? I think if it affected the men the way it affected the women. You don't have to answer this question, but what do you think of these protests at Kavanaugh's home? You know, when people are gathering and applying pressure, even peacefully, do you have an opinion about this sort of public demonstration in front of the homes of the justices?
I think it's a free country, you know, and I think from a legal perspective, so long as there's not, you know, trespassing or something like that, that would be a problem. I think that people are entitled to express their opinions. And look, I mean, when people aren't allowed to do things in lawful ways, we know from the times of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that that even inspires civil disobedience as a way of protecting rights and changing the law. So, you know, look, I mean, I think when you accept a position like one of the 9 justices of the Supreme Court, and you're dealing with the most basic freedoms and parts of equality that this country is about, and you're challenging what's really in the DNA of our country, that I think that, you know, may be a bummer for you, but, you know, you're sort of opening yourself up to things like that. You just are.
Yeah, we're not endorsing violence or trespassing or vandalism or any of those types of things. But, you know, it is interesting. I was watching a documentary the other day about how many of our public places, our institutions, are actually architecturally designed to allow for places of civil protest, right, where people can come. I mean, the way they've got the squares laid out, it's actually designed for democracy. It sounds rather romantic when I say it that way.
Right.
But, you know, protest is part of freedom. Rachel, any final thoughts? And of course, I'll slug the website. But, you know, as we go into the months ahead, what are you thinking?
I think that it's a really scary time in our country. And I think that religious extremists are making unbelievable gains in wrecking our democracy, really, at heart, and taking away the rights right now of some marginalized communities. But in the end, it ruins the country for all of us. So we did polling. We know that most Americans support the separation of religion and government. But now is the time to show up for the cause, because this foundational principle is so extremely in jeopardy. So everyone should join AU.org and show up for your neighbor today, because this is a really tough moment in the country.
Rachel, you're amazing. I will continue to promote the organization and the efforts that you are behind, because I think we're certainly more effective when we organize. And you guys being on the front lines, I want to be a part of that. AU.org, Rachel Lazar, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much, Seth. Good to be with you.
I don't know how much more could be said on this short broadcast, except stay alert, get involved. I mentioned the broadcast with special guest Dale McGowan. That's coming up next Tuesday, and I will see you then. Take care.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.